السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته.
أبا عبد الرحمن، how are you؟
الحمد لله يا شيخنا.
How are you going؟
We can go on, sir.
إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستغفره ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا وسيئات أعمالنا. من يهده الله فلا مضل له ومن يضلل فلا هادي له. أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له، وأشهد أن محمدا عبده ورسوله صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم. We are on باب الشرح in our book الأدب المفرد by Imam al-Bukhari رحمه الله. As we repeatedly mentioned, Al-Imam al-Bukhari rahimahullah has specifically compiled this book regarding how the Muslim should conduct himself, what are the manners of Islam. Most of the times we blame people for not being mannerly, but the problem is that they don't even know, we have not explained to them what is the standard line of conduct they should follow. If you say somebody does what is wrong, yes, wrong. You criticize what is wrong, but you still have an obligation to set the standard. So most of the times, we do not set the standard for noble character. We do not set the standard for noble manners. So when people do what is opposite, we will criticize them, but we have not taught them what is right. We have not given them a standard. We have not given them a model. We have not directed them to what is beneficial. So it will not suffice to only criticize. As we criticize, we must also basically teach. In fact, the teaching, basic teaching, should precede criticism. But when it has to be that criticism comes first, then we should not leave away setting the standards for a good line of conduct. Like Allah told us in the Quran, that لَقَدْ كَانَ لَكُمْ فِي رَسُولِ اللَّهِ أُسْوَةٌ حَسَنَةٌ لِمَنْ كَانَ يَرْجُ اللَّهَ وَالْيَوْمَ الْآخِرَ وَذَكَرَ اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا. This is setting a standard for the rest of mankind. It is from this that we have chosen to read this book, Al-Adab al-Mufrad, by Al-Imam al-Bukhari, rahimahullah. We are on the chapter on Ash-Shuhru, the evils of being stingy and covetous. Ash-shuhru and al-bukhlu are similar in their meaning, but the word ash-shuhru is more encompassing. As for ash-shuhru, it is when the individual does never give. He is stingy, and at the same time, he wants to take from others. He will not give from himself. And then his mind is all in the things that belong to others. He wants to take from others to add to his own. He will not give obligatory zakah, and he would hardly even hand out sadaqah in charity. Zakah is hard on him. Even the rights of the people that belong to them, their dues, he will not give it to them. But if he finds a means to obtaining something from them, whether lawfully or unlawfully, he wants to take over that thing from them. This is what ash-shuhru refers to. But as for al-bukhl, it is just that he is stingy, he does not want to give. So ash-shuhru is more encompassing than al-bukhl. Ash-shuhru is more encompassing than al-bukhl, because ash-shuhru involves not giving and craving what is in the hands of the rest of the people, while al-bukhl is essentially not willing to give, not willing to hand out what is due for you to hand out, But as for al-bukhl, it involves just skipping. As for shuhu, you keep, you don't give, then you want to take from others, whether lawfully or unlawfully. And the narrations we read yesterday, the Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, لا يجتمع الشح والإيمان في قلب عبد أبدا. الشح, stinginess and covetousness, will not combine with Iman in the heart of a single person. You will never find a single person. His heart is filled with stinginess and covetousness, and then there's Iman in the heart. When there is sound Iman in the heart of the individual, you will not find that person being stingy. You will not find him being covetous of those things in the hands of the people. In another report, he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, that khuslatan la yajtami'ani fi mu'minin. Two traits will not combine in a person of Iman. If a person has sound Iman, if a person has sound Iman, you will not find two things in him. The first one he mentioned, alayhi salatu wasalam, is what? Al-bukhl, being stingy. The second one he mentioned, alayhi salatu wasalam, is what? Su'ul khuluq, bad character. These two things, when you find it in the person, they are symbols that he has very, very weak Iman. And when you find a person of sound Iman, you will not find al-bukhl and su'ul khuluq with him. May Allah protect each and every one of us. The third hadith under the chapter of Ash-Shuh is the report from Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. In it, Al-Imam al-Bukhari said, Rahimahullah, Haddathana Abu Nu'aym, Qala Haddathana al-A'mash, Al-Malik ibn al-Harith, An Abdullah ibn Rabi'a, Qala, Kunna julusan inda Abdullah, فذكروا رجلا فذكروا من خلقه فقال عبد الله أرأيتم لو قطعتم رأسه أكنتم تستطيعون أن تعيدوه قالوا لا قال فيده قالوا لا قال فرجله قالوا لا قال فإنكم لا تستطيعون أن تغيروا خلقه حتى تغير خلقه إن النطفة لتستقر في الرحم 40 ليلة ثم تنحدر دما ثم تكون علقة ثم تكون مضغة ثم يبعث الله ملكا فيكتب رزقه وخلقه وشقيا أو سعيدا. Imam al-Bukhari rahimahullah reports this hadith from his Shaykh Abu Nu'aym, that is Al-Imam Al-Fadl ibn Dukay. Al-Fadl ibn Dukay was from amongst the earliest teachers of Al-Imam al-Bukhari, from amongst the earliest and the most noble persons that Al-Imam al-Bukhari took knowledge from was Al-Imam Al-Fadl, Imam Al-Fadl ibn Dukay. Kain Abu Nu'aym al-Balkhi rahimahullah. Imam al-Bukhari said, Haddathana Abu Nu'aym. And Imam al-Fadl ibn Dukayn, he said, Haddathana al-A'mash. Al-A'mash in this isnad is al-Imam Sulaiman ibn Mihran rahimahullah. So Shaykh al-Bukhari in this hadith was al-Imam Sulaiman ibn Mihran al-A'mash. He said, I'm Malik ibn al-Harith. The Imam Sulaiman ibn Mihran al-A'mash reports from Malik ibn al-Harith. He reports from his Sheikh, Malik ibn al-Harith, who is reporting from Abdullah ibn Rabi'a ibn Yazid al-Dimashqi. So Abdullah ibn Rabi'a, he is Abdullah ibn Rabi'a ibn Yazid al-Dimashqi rahimahullah. Abdullah ibn Rabi'a, ulama have khilaf regarding his suhbah. It is khilaf regarding whether he is a companion or he wasn't a companion of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, that is Abdullah ibn Rabi'ah. Regarding his suhbah, there is khilaf. It is well known that he met many of the elders amongst the companions of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, amongst whom was Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. He is reporting this hadith from Abu Abdurrahman, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu anhu. He said, Kunna julusan inda Abdullah. He said, once we were sitting with Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, radiallahu anhu, fadhakaru rajula. So the people mentioned a man, fadhakaru min khuluqihi. And they began to talk about the character of that man. He mentioned a man while I was in the sitting of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. فَذَكَرُوا خُلُقَهُ. They began to say something. They began to talk about that man's character. Perhaps he had character failures. He had issues regarding his character. Maybe he was unruly to someone. Or maybe he said something, or he did something, or he acted in a way that was unacceptable. And it began to be mentioned in the sitting while Abdullah ibn Mas'ud was there with them. Faqala Abdullah. Thereupon Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu said, he said radiallahu anhu, أَرَأَيْتُمْ لَوْ قَطَعْتُمْ رَأْسَهُ أَكُنْتُمْ تستطيعون أن تعيدوا أرأيتم لو قطعتم رأسه. Do you all think that لو قطعتم رأسه, if it were possible that you cut off this man's head, أكنتم تستطيعون أن تعيدوا, are you able to return his head back to its place? This man you talk about, he was wrong in this, he was wrong in that. He did this badly. He did this and it was unacceptable. If you had cut off this man's head, لو كنتم قطعتم رأسه, if you were to cut off his head, أكنتم تستطيعون أن تعيدوا, can you return that head to its place? Can you? قالوا لا. They responded in the negative. No, we can't. And nobody can. Except when the Dajjal comes in the end of times, when he will slice the mu'min who will challenge him into two and return him into its place. So that is the exception that we have for things like this. And that's why when the Dajjal comes, what he will do is, it is something that will contradict normalcy. That's not the normal thing. Otherwise, the normal thing is that if you sever a man's head, may Allah protect us, you can't return that person's head. It's either upon, perhaps when a person is being punished capitally, like the one who abuses the messenger and causes fasad on the earth, or the one who is guilty of murder, when he is being paid back for the punishment of murder. In that kind of a circumstance, people's head may be severed because they have been punished for murder. So if you do that, are you able to return that head to its place? You can't. So the people definitely answered and said, La, qala fayadahu, if it were his hands that you cut off, are you able to return that hand to its place? Qalu la, qala farijilahu, if it were his feet, law qata'tum rijlahu, if you were to cut off his feet, akuntum tastati'una an tu'iduha, will you be able to return that feet, that leg? Will you be able to return that leg? Qalu la. They all answered and said, no, nobody does that. You can't return a leg that you cut off from someone. Then he now wanted to affirm the lesson from the illustrations that he had given. This is evidence that when a teacher teaches, it will start by describing and giving illustrations to his students. In all of these that Abdullah ibn Mas'ud was saying to the people, it is by way of an illustration. And he was going to deduce lessons from that illustration. So he was asking that if you were to cut off someone's head, can you return it the same? If you were to cut off someone's hand, can you return it the same? If you were to cut off someone's feet, can you return it the same? This goes to show us the approach to teaching. As a teacher, the teacher will determine how best do I convey my message to my students. This is what Abdullah ibn Mas'ud is doing. And he himself, radiallahu anhu, had learned this from the Prophet Muhammad, alayhi salatu wasalam, from the approach of the Messenger, alayhi salatu wasalam, regarding his companions when he taught them, was to give them illustrations or ask them questions that would be guide towards the point that he was going to make them understand. So Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu was not just talking about this from the grapevine. It was a lesson that he learned from the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam by asking questions, by giving illustrations that will make the students to grab the lessons properly before actually pointing out the actual points, the actual lessons, the points of benefit that he desired to ram home with those illustrations and with those questions that he was asking, radiallahu anhu. So now he goes on to explain, radiallahu anhu. He said, فَإِنَّكُمْ لَا تَسْتَطِعُونَ أَن تُغَيِّرُوا خُلُقَهُ حَتَّى تُغَيِّرُوا خَلْقَهُ. This is the point. فَإِنَّكُمْ لَا تَسْتَطِعُونَ أَن تُغَيِّرُوا خُلُقَهُ حَتَّى تُغَيِّرُوا خَلْقَهُ. If you cannot, فَإِنَّكُمْ لَا تَسْتَطِعُونَ. You should all understand. لَا تَسْتَطِعُونَ أَن تُغَيِّرُوا خُلُقَهُ. You will not be able to change his character. You will not be able to change his behavior. حَتَّى تُغَيِّرُوا خَلْقَهُ. Until and unless you are able to change his physical look. If you cannot change his physical look, then you cannot change his character. The point here is that person that you had complained about, perhaps he was born with that character. Don't forget, we have two ways by which people gain particular character. If you find a man who is impatient, it is possible that his parents were not patient with him. If you find a man who beats his wife, it is possible that his parents used to beat their wives. If you find a man who lied a lot, these bad negative traits are inherited. Likewise, good traits are inherited. If you find a man who is very, very benevolent, it is possible that his parents were benevolent people. If you find a man who is very patient, it is possible that his parents were patient people. That's why the ulama say that akhlaq can be what? Jibiliya. Akhlaq can be Jibiliya. These ones that are Jibiliya, they are far more difficult to change because they are like, as Abdullah ibn Mas'ud illustrated, they are like the head and the leg of the individual. So if you cannot change a man's leg, then you can't change that character that he had inherited, except with a lot of work. Because the other aspect of human character are those that are maktasabiyya, those ones that are acquired. There are evidences in the Quran and the Sunnah that a person may be of bad character, and then he learns to be of good character. He was bad. He has an innate nature to be hasty. He has an innate nature to be impatient. He has an innate nature not to be trustworthy. Trustworthiness itself can be inherited, just like being untrustworthy and dishonest may also be what? Inherited. Because the Prophet ﷺ, in many ahadith, And the one that's very near us, Sahih Bukhari al-Muslim. He says, Man fasabbara sabbarahullah. Whoever learns to be patient, Allah grants him patience. You learn patience, then Allah will make you become a patient person. So this is evidence that patience as a character trait, can be what? It can be learned. But this is the more difficult thing, is that just overnight, you want to change the character of a person that is a part of him. This is what Abdullah in the spirit said, that if you want to just quickly change the character, then you must be ready to change the physical look. So if it is difficult to change the look of the person, then it is difficult to change the character of the person. The point here is, if it is difficult to change the character of that person, then it is difficult to change. If it is difficult to change the look of a person, you can't change the person's head. So it means you can't change the person's character. But like we said, that is because it is a difficult thing. He has said what he has said, radiallahu anhu, to show that it is difficult. It is not to show that it is quite impossible. So the question now is, what is the connection between this expression and the chapter about greediness and stinginess? The ulama say the connection is that perhaps that person that was being talked about, the character that they were criticizing about him was a character of what? Stinginess. What they were talking about him, that man is stingy, that man is stingy, that man is stingy. Then Ibn Mas'ud said, you can't change his head, meaning that you can't change that his character of what? Stinginess easily. It's a hard thing to change. If a person becomes stingy, he finds it difficult to change. He finds it hard to change. And like we have said, it is not that it is absolutely impossible to change, because there are ahadith that show that we can change our character. We can learn good character, but that will come with a lot of effort. It's just like someone doing vulgar speech. There are some of the people with the slightest, even without provocation, you smell vulgarity in their expression. They can't talk to you except that they are vulgar. Why? Because it's some innate traits from them. They have inherited vulgarity. So even when they learn not to be vulgar, with the slightest provocation, you sense that vulgar statements. They are abusive, easily abusive. With the slightest discussion with someone, you see them giving expressions of abuse. They can't hold back from abuse. Why? It is in it. So even when they are learning not to be abusive in their expressions, it takes a lot. It's like changing their head. It's like changing their legs. It's like changing their physical look. So this means that to change our character is something that is very difficult. Now, the second issue we want to point out is that, what is the connection between this and the chapter about greediness? The ulama said perhaps the character that was being criticized in that man that they were talking about was the character of what? Greed. Perhaps that man was a very greedy person. And Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu sought to make them understand that that character you are talking about is not something that is easy to change. If a person becomes greedy, if a person becomes covetous, it is not something that is easy to change. Meaning that anybody who has this character with him has to make a lot of efforts to be sure that he is free from this negative attitude of greed and what? And covetousness, al-bukhul, and what? Ash-shurfu. May Allah protect us from that. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud went on to emphasize how difficult it could be to change a person's character. And then he said, radiallahu anhu, inna nutfata latastaqirru fi ar-rahim 40 laylatan ثم تنحدر دما ثم تكون علقة ثم تكون مضغة ثم يبعث الله ملكا فيكتب رزقه وخلقه وشقيا أو سعيدا He said, radiallahu anhu, like he reported in the hadith of As-Sadiq wal-Masduq. We have and we remember the hadith of As-Sadiq al-Masduq. That's the name of that hadith. Hadith As-Sadiq wal-Masduq. The hadith of the one who is ever truthful. The hadith of the one who is ever believed. And that's the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Because in that hadith, Abdullah ibn Mas'ud said to us that haddathana as-sadiq wal-masduq. The one who is as-sadiq, ever truthful, wal-masduq. The one who is ever believed to be truthful, the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. He narrated to us, and we know that lengthy hadith. Inna ahadakum yujma'u khalquhu fi batni ummihi. That hadith in Al-Arba'un, that was essentially collected by Imam al-Bukhari and Muslim, was reported from the Prophet by who? Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. So Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu now took from that report to tell us. That's why when the companions make statements that they could not have made from personal reasoning, we say that lahu hukmul marfu'. When a companion says something like this that he's going to say to us, this is not a matter of juristic reasoning. It's a matter of something that is unseen, because we don't see what is inside the tummy of a woman when she's pregnant. And yet Abdullah ibn Mas'ud is telling us about it. So how did he know it? He had learned it from the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. That's why when a companion tells us about a matter of ghaib, a matter of unseen, like a companion telling us something inside Al-Jannah, like a companion telling us something inside Jahannam, like a companion telling us something on the day of Qiyamah, or from the past, like a companion telling us, like Abdullah ibn Mas'ud told us a lengthy story of Musa alayhi salatu wasalam and Harun. Very lengthy story. It was from that hadith of Ibn Abbas that was reported from him by Sa'id ibn Jubayr, that we got aware that Harun is 1 year older than Musa alayhi salam. More so that that companion was not from amongst those who used to report Israeliyat. Like Abdullah ibn Abbas did not used to report Israeliyat. He was not known with that. Radiallahu anhuma. So when a companion, for example, tells us what happened in the time of Nabi Nuh alayhi salam and so on, we understand that he could not have been saying that except that he had heard it from who? From the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. The same thing applies in this hadith we are reading today, except that we have the reports that he ascribes to the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, and we also have the reports that he did not ascribe it to the Prophet. So if we had not seen that report where he ascribed these events that we shall talk about now to the Prophet, it suffices to say this is not from the juristic reasoning of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. And that is something that he would have heard from the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. I'm just trying to explain something from the science of hadith, that a statement would be mawquf. It would be a statement of a companion and to be authentic from him. But they would say, lahu hukmul marfu'. It has the ruling of something that has been reported from the Prophet. Some people can say, no, this is just a statement of a companion. How are you saying that it would have been reported? Because the way of the companion is that. There are things they would not have said from juristic reason. A companion will not be telling us what happens in the womb of a woman from juristic reason, because it is from the ghaib. They will not be telling us about Al-Jannah from juristic reason, because it is from ghaib. They will not be telling us about Jahannam. They will not be telling us about the day of Qiyamah. They will not be telling us about Alamatu Sa'ah, the signs of the last hour, from his own opinion. It would be something that he had heard from the Prophet. So there are some reports that we would hear from companions that are from the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, even though they don't say, I heard it from the Prophet. They say, lahu hukmul marfu'. It has the ruling of a statement that had been heard from the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. I hope that that point of benefit is clear. To further make us understand that it is a hard thing to change the character of a people, It is a hard thing to change a person's character. If a person is vulgar, it is hard to change him or her. If a person is stingy, it is hard to have him change. If a person is impatient, it is hard, especially if all of these negative characters are characters that the person had inherited from his or her parents. It is something that is difficult, unless he pays a lot of attention. The life of Masoud radiallahu anhu wanted to affirm that it is not something that is easy to come by, to change a person's character. If the man is greedy, it is not easy for him to change overnight. This is a point of reference. To affirm that, he said, radiallahu anhu, inna nutfa latastaqirru fi rahim 40 layla, inna nutfa. The nutfa is the semen of a male when he ejaculates, when a man ejaculates in his family. What comes out is what and meets the woman's egg is what is referred to as what? A nutfa. So he said, radiallahu anhu, inna nutfa latastaqirru fi rahim 40 layla. That semen that is ejaculated, it would remain in the womb of a woman for 40 days. Or if you like, for 40 nights, nutfa will remain in the womb of the woman. Of course, when it forms the gamete, it will remain attached to the womb of the woman for 40 nights or for 40 days. Then it becomes gradually bloody, begins to gradually, because the original semen used to be something whitish. So it becomes attached to the womb for 40 days. At the end of those 40 days, it gradually becomes something bloody, reddish, and heavy. It becomes to gradually, shay'an fa shay'an. It becomes to congeal and turns red. That's why he said, radiallahu anhu, thummatan hadirin dama. It gradually becomes reddish. It gradually becomes bloody, like something like a blood. Thummatakun ala qatar. And then it graduates to become a clot of blood. From semen, it gradually begins to turn red until it becomes what? Alaqa. The alaqa is a clot of blood itself, congealed blood itself. That graduates from nutfa to what? Alaqa. And then he said, summa takunu mudghata. Then gradually it becomes this congealed piece of blood, gradually begins to become and form a piece of flesh. The first one is the semen. It attaches itself to the womb of the woman, of course, when it becomes a gamete. And then it gradually becomes reddish. It becomes a clot of blood. That is what we refer to as alaqa. Some of the scholars say it is alaqa because it is connected. It is mu'allaqa. It is connected to the womb of the woman, even at that stage. Then from its reddish blood clots, it gradually comes and becomes a piece of flesh, mudga. They say it is referred to as mudga because it appears like something that has been chewed. That piece of flesh will appear like a chewed, something that you have chewed. And in the size of something that you have chewed, but it's a piece of flesh. And then Ibn Mas'ud radiallahu, each of these happens, like we know in the bigger hadith, over the period of 40 days. He says, "Inna ahadakum yujma'u khalquhu fi batn ummihi 40 yawman nutfatan, thumma yakunu 'alaqatan mithla dhalik, thumma yakunu mudghatan mithla dhalik." At the beginning, it was what? Nutfa. Then it graduates and becomes what? 'Alaqa. Then it graduates and becomes what? Mudgha. That means it was semen. It graduates and becomes a clot of blood. It graduates to congealed blood that is together. They graduate and forms what? A piece of flesh. It is this piece of flesh that is referred to as what? Mudga. So it is from nutfa, then what? Alaqa, then what? Mudga. Each of these happens over a period of 40, making a period of what? 120 days. ثم يبعث الله ملكا. Then Allah will send malakan, an angel to it. In the other more popular report of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud, what did he say, alayhi salatu wasalam? ثم يرسل إليه. So an angel will be sent to that piece of flesh that is appearing like a huge piece of flesh. So he said, radiallahu anhu, يَبْعَثُ اللَّهُ مَلَكَ. Allah will send an angel. فَيَكْتُبُ رِزْقَهُ وَخُلُقَهُ وَشَقِيًا أَوْ سَعِيدًا. So that angel will write down, he will document. From the time you are mudga, it will be documented with you, rizquka, your wealth, rizquhu. And if you look at this, it says, for yuktabu rizquhu, his rizq will be documented. This is mufradun mudaf, rizquhu, his rizq will be documented. It says, for yuktabu rizquhu, his rizq will be documented. That is all the arzak. The air that you shall breathe, the food you shall eat, the water you shall drink, clothes you will wear, every risk that you will enjoy will be written down from the very first time, even when you had not become a full-blown human being. Life will be blown into the individual, and then his arzak will be documented. He will enjoy so-so-so, he will do so-so-so, he will get so-so-so. Some of the scholars say that this is a point of reference in this hadith, why this hadith has come under babu shuh, greediness. That if it is written, if your risk is written, why are you holding back money unlawfully? Why are you holding back people's rights unlawfully? Why are you refusing to pay zakah? Why do you think that if you give charity, you become poor? Have you forgotten that your arzak are already documented? Why do you want to acquire money unlawfully? Have you forgotten that your risk has already been documented? So if you remember that your risk is already documented, you will not wish to acquire wealth unlawfully. If you understand your own risk that will be yours is already documented, you will not want to hold back charity that you should hand over to someone, because it's already documented. So that you hand over charity does not mean that you return to become a poor person. And that you give people their rights does not mean that your risk will not still come back to you. Your risk is yours. So why become greedy? Why become covetous? Why do you want to usurp the rights of others? Have you forgotten that your risk is already documented? So some of the scholars say that this is the reason why this hadith has been placed under the chapter of what? Ashrahu. Because one of the problems of the stingy person is that he has forgotten that risk is actually belonging to Allah, and it has actually been documented for him. It will not change. So Abdullah ibn Mas'ud said, radiallahu anhu, فَيُكْتَهُ رِزْكُهُ. The risk of the individual will be written down, documented right from the time the individual is in the womb. وَخُلُقَهُ. His behavior, his line of conduct, is also documented. Don't forget, we had mentioned that people inherit bad character, just like they inherit what? Good character. People inherit good character. I know a group of people, all of them in their family are trustworthy people. If you give something to them in amana, they return that amana to you. All of them, everybody. As if to keep amana is a family treasure amongst them. Everybody kept amana. This is very, very common amongst people. You find someone who is very, very hardworking. Go to their family, you find all of them hardworking. You find someone, when he talks to people, he's very careful. He chooses his words. Go and check his father and mother. You see them, a group of people who choose their words. Likewise, you find some people, they are very, very aggressive, even in their speech. Go back to their family, you see that they are aggressive people in their speech. So where we have come from affects us so much. It affects our character so much. That's why when you want to have children, if you want to begin to have children, select a woman from good family. That's why he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, tahayyaru linutfiqu, select where you place your semen. Because whoever she is going to influence what you give birth to. Likewise, women, select, look well into the character of the man. These days, it is physics and chemistry young girls and young boys are looking out for. I love him. They care less about where that man has come from. Then when they become married to him, he begins to beat them. They begin to find out where that love they thought they had among themselves had now quickly run to. They begin to find out that the man is not a humble person. They begin to find out that he's a very violent person. You did not search for that before marriage. The same thing happens to men. You find out that the woman is very arrogant. She never surprises with little. At the time that you are wishing to marry her, you did not find out about that from her family. So it is from both sides. It is all about love now. People hardly found out what used to happen in a family lineage. And in the past, even amongst the people, even amongst people of culture, they used to find out from family how these people were in the past. But now it is the world of internet. It is how well he's able to chat with you on WhatsApp that makes you think that he's a nice man to marry. May Allah protect each and every one of us. The point here is that character traits are inherited. If you find a man stingy, his parents could be stingy people. His grandfather could be a stingy man. His grandmother could be a stingy person. If you find a man being vulgar, if you go back to his family, you may be able to trace vulgarity. And when the case is like that, it means that individual who now discovers this negative trait from him has a lot of work to do regarding himself. If you find out that in your family, you are people who speak vulgar, you can insult anybody, you can abuse anybody. For you to work upon yourself, you need a lot of work. A lot of work has to be done. A lot of work has to be done for you to return to become someone who will not be vulgar in his speech to people. Likewise, if the man is a stingy person, some women complain, our husbands are able, they are capable, they have, but they don't spend on us. Go back to his father and mother, you see. Go back to the father and mother. You see how his father was. Because most times, the male children, they take to the character of the males, of the fathers. And likewise, the females usually take to the character of their mothers. Usually, this is usual. You can find exceptions where there will be interchange. You find a male child having the character of the mother, and the female having the character of the father. From both sides, the point is that when you marry, look well, because what that family is known for is going to play out inside your home. You will see it. You will see it. So likewise, if you now discover that you have a negative character trait, you have a duty to work upon yourself. If your negative character trait is greediness and covetousness, you have the duty to work upon yourself to relieve yourself of this negative trait. Abdullah ibn Mas'ud radiallahu anhu said, "Yuktabu rizqahu, our arzak will be documented, wa khuluqahu, likewise our character will be established and documented, wa shaqiyan aw sa'ida." Whether that person will be a wretched person, shaqi, Allah protect us, or is going to be sa'id, a person who will be successful, all of that will be documented right from the womb of the individual. May Allah protect us. I hope that this hadith is clear. The point of reference is that the people complained about the negative character of a man in front of Abdullah ibn Mas'ud. And he thought to caution them that, yes, you are only complaining about this man. It is difficult to change a negative character, just as it is difficult to change the head of a man. As difficult as it is to change the head of a man, it is also difficult to change a negative character. So, but that also means that if a person now discovers negative character with himself, he has a big, big duty to struggle to change that negative trait. Shortfall, being greedy and covetous is something that's very, very negative. The Prophet said, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, لا يجتمع الشح والإيمان في قلب عبد أبدا. الشح والإيمان, they will not combine in a single individual. That means if you have now discovered that you have a shuh, you have a duty upon yourself to work upon yourself, to work against being stingy. Start learning to give. Start reading about the virtues of giving. When you read about what you stand to gain when you give, they encourage you to give. When you read about the virtues of sadaqah, they encourage you to give sadaqah. When you read about the evils of holding back the rights of people, they encourage you to give the people their rights. When you read about the virtues of zakah, they encourage you to give in zakah. We should also read about the story of people who are benevolent, how Allah showered blessings on them for their benevolence. All of these will help people who have negative character of stinginess and covetousness. It will help them to begin to learn how to be very benevolent and gracious towards people, how to be a person of charity who will hand out gifts to people without even looking at whether they say thank you to him or not. He would like to be a person who is very, very generous to the rest of the servants of Allah. I hope that this point is clear. We just finished the chapter Babu Shuh, the chapter about being stingy, the chapter about being greedy. Being greedy is from the symbols of weak iman. Being greedy is from the symbols of weak iman. And being generous is from the symbols of iman. We said to us yesterday, the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam said, وَصَدَقَةُ بُرْهَانٍ. When a person hands out sadaqah, that is evidence. Evidence of what? Burhanul iman. That is evidence that the person is a person of what? Iman. But when the person is stingy, that's also burhan. It is from the burhan of what? Dhaful iman. It is from the burhan, from the evidences, from the indices, from the indicators of weak iman, is that the person is stingy and covetous. He's stingy. He's stingy. He hardly ever gives. May Allah protect us from this negative trait. And if a person had inherited the character of stinginess, he has a duty to work really, really hard upon himself, so that Allah makes him from those who are generous. From the character of the place where the people is to be generous. And the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was a very generous person. Alayhi salatu wa sallam. I think that will suffice on the chapter on being stingy and covetous. And I also think that we are 10 minutes away from the time. Perhaps we can stop here and go to the next chapter, inshallah, in our next class. So perhaps if we have one or two questions regarding these issues, it is a very bad thing. Now, we in our own times are very stingy, very stingy, very stingy. In our times, we are very stingy. And at the same time, we are very covetous. You see these days flyers go about. Somebody needs 5,000, somebody needs 50,000, somebody, everybody wants to ask the next person to give. Give me, give me, give me. How much have you given? And we have under.
Assalamu alaikum, sir. So I think it's okay, so oops. Assalamu alaikum. Represents the patient. Thank you, lost due to poor network. You'll be back soon, evening.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته يا شيخ.
طبعاً the phone with internet just got shut down. But we are back here, Bismillah. Alhamdulillah. Can we go now? Are we going with the question?
Yes.
Now.
So then to the questions we on the city shower from yesterday. Okay. So they're asking what is the best way to observe the city shower, and can one fast using Monday and Thursday to allow him maximize the reward of both?
What's the question? The best way to fast city shower.
Yes, sir.
The best way to pass the six days of Shawwal is to be sure that you have completed Ramadan. You first complete Ramadan. Because he said, alayhi salatu wasalam, man sama Ramadan, summa atba'ahu sittan min Shawwal. So complete Ramadan first. The best way to fast the six of Shawwal, complete your Ramadan first. When you complete Ramadan, then we start talking about the best of times to make your 6 days of Shawwal. You can make your 6 days of Shawwal on Mondays and Thursdays if you have up to 6 days remaining in the month after you complete your obligatory Ramadan. You can fast them on Ayyamul Bid. You can fast them together with themselves. That is one, maybe you are starting on a Monday. And you fast it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The sixth day should be a Saturday. But you leave a Saturday aside because the fasting of Shawwal is not compulsory. And we have been prohibited from fasting on Saturdays except those fasts are compulsory. He said, alayhi salatu wasalam, la tasumu yawma sabti illa fi maqtiridu alaykum. This hadith is sahih. Many of the people have said many things about this hadith, but the hadith is authentic. He said, la tasumu yawma sabti illa fi maqtiridu alaykum. Don't fast on a Saturday except a fast that is compulsory on you. If you say it means don't fast on Saturday alone, the fact still remains that if you fast on a Friday and you fast on a Saturday, if the fast of Saturday is not compulsory, you are still conflicting with this hadith. So leave aside Saturday, come back to Sunday. So you can fast your six of Shawwal on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday. You can go on like that. You can fast them on Monday and Thursday. If you have up to 6 Mondays and Thursdays, you can fast them on Ayyamul Bid, that is the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th day of the month, when you have the full moon at the middle of the month. You can fast them on those days. You can also fast them together, as we have given in an example. But the best thing is complete your Ramadan first. Many times the people want to say, oh, can I combine that with repaying Ramadan? And I, with the intention of paying back Ramadan, which is compulsory, and I be fasting 6th of Shawwal? Some of the scholars have allowed it. But the best is that complete your Ramadan first. That is when you'll be following that hadith of Abu Sa'id in al-Khudri in Sahih Muslim, where the Messenger alayhi salatu wasalam spoke about the 6 days of Shawwal. What he said is, man sama Ramadan, whoever fasts the fast of Ramadan. There are interpretations, but the correct interpretation is that whoever completes the fasting in the month of Ramadan, the fasting that was compulsory on him in Ramadan, and the last Ramadan was 30. So if you are owing Ramadan, pay back Ramadan first. Thumma atba'ahu sittan min Shawwal. Then you can now follow it up with 6 days in Shawwal. This is the best way to fast the six of Shawwal. Allahu a'lam.
Jazakumullahu khair.
Ameen wa antum.
This is another one. What should a woman do if her husband has evil character, he did well before marriage and is now refusing to try to change.
If the husband does what?
If her husband has evil character, he hid it well before marriage and is now refusing to try to change. Yes, sir.
Many times women say this. I've heard some women saying that the man got his character hidden. It was because you did not find out. There is no character anybody has that his friends and relatives do not know about, except they hide it from you. When they hide it from you, or you don't even research at all. That's why when a young girl comes to say, oh, I have seen a man, he's a nice man, I smile a lot. You young girl at 17, 18, you say one man is good. Didn't we smile? A 17-year-old girl, 18-year-old girl, 19, 20-year-old girl says, I saw a man and he's a very good man. How do you know a man is good? You know what it takes to be a good man at age 18 or 20. And you think that because you're an undergraduate, that is enough evidence and chance for you to know a good man, when even a woman of 30 may not know a good man. So the bulk of the job, that's the job of the wali of a woman. The father of a woman should research who wants to marry his daughter. Find out about him. Go to the people that he relates with. Ask them about him in a honorable manner so that they can expose the matter to you. Ask from his family. Find out who they are. And be sure not to deceive yourself. Because sometimes people already make up their mind before they begin to make findings. Go and find out. In the north, it is still there to a very large extent. I'm not praising any people. I'm just saying what I know. It was a very common thing. I married from the north. And it was after the marriage I began to know how they had asked about me. They went to the imam of our masjid. I did not know. They were asking how I was coming to the masjid. They went to my friends. I never knew. So if you're a young girl at 18, 19, 20, 21, even a woman at 30. So don't say the man was hiding his character. Of course, he will hide it from you because he wants you. Do you want him to tell you from the beginning of marriage or before marriage that he's a bad man? If he told you that he was a bad man, will you marry him? So why are you saying that he's hiding it? You are just stating the obvious because he will necessarily hide it. You are the one who did not do your homework, or your awliya, people who married you out, did not do their homework. So before you marry a man out, you find it, you dig it out. It will be known, who are they, from where are they from, who is his grandfather, who were his grandparents, which training did he pass through, who were his teachers. These are the people who influence people, parents and teachers. Then the environment where they grew up, the schools they went to. I have related with some four people in recent times. They went to the same school, and I can draw a single line between the four of them, wallahi. A woman and two men, they went to the same school, and I can see the same character traits in them. So the schools where people went to, the friends they kept, the society where they grew up, their parents, their mothers, their fathers, their grandparents, they influenced them. me completely sufficient to tell us the entire details about this, but that the woman comes to say that her husband was hiding some of his bad character, that I think that's her own fault and the fault of her awliya not to have actually done what they were supposed to do to recognize the character of that person before they got committed into marrying the person out. There are a lot of people that if you dig their past, if you dig their family backgrounds, you will never think of marrying your child to them or marrying them in case they were women. There are some women, if you dig their past, you know who their mothers were, you know who their grandmothers were, you know how they were related to people in their family, you would never think of marrying them. But these days, because the woman begins to wear jilbab, she's wearing niqab, she's memorizing Quran, you think that that is all that makes a woman. You will not know the reality until she gets into your house. And these days, it doesn't take long. Within 6 months now, you begin to see the clear pictures of people, whether male or female. May Allah protect us. Do the homework. Don't be deceived by WhatsApp and Facebook chats. Don't be deceived by niqab. Don't be deceived by the number of verses of the Quran she had memorized. All of these, yes, they include and aid a person's personality, but the actual picture of that person also remains. It is good that you at least have a knowledge of that. And the way to do that is to go back to the backgrounds. The women employ your male relatives to help you search about men. It is not just about sending email messages to say, please, can you tell me about this man and his character when you're already in love with him? All of these are things that will not fail you when you find out about a man or when you find out about a woman before marriage. May Allah protect each and every one of us.
Amen, Ya Sheikh. Jazakumullah khair.
Amen, wa antum Aba Amir.
This one reads, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Is stinginess restricted to cash alone? Jazakumullah khair.
Stinginess would not restricted it to cash. We have talked about possessions, generally speaking. We talked about a lot of things at the beginning when we explained what stinginess is. And some of the scholars even say that involves coming in front for someone. Someone needs a guarantor. You know he deserves to be guaranteed. And you, instead of guaranteeing him, you keep away from guaranteeing him. That can also come from the aspects of stinginess. Stinginess is to keep away what you could give freely, whatever you can give freely. It's not just about cash, but cash is a major aspect of it. Because one of the biggest ways of goodness to the people is to extend cash to them, food to them, carry them, take them in a ride if you have the opportunity. We gave a lot of other examples. From that is also using your personality to solve a problem. You know, if you come into a matter, the matter will be resolved. You now choose to keep away. And there is no danger for keeping away. You just want to keep away for the sake of keeping away. That can also count from the aspects of stinginess, because you have something you can give. You can give your personality to help the situation, but you choose to keep away and keep aloof, and then the situation worsens. So all of these can come from the aspects of stinginess. But when you discuss a matter, the most common thing regarding that matter usually comes in your illustrations and examples. That is why the issues of giving money, giving possessions, giving a house, giving a car, giving the clothes, giving food to people have been the illustrations we use. Why? Because that is the most common thing regarding stinginess and covetousness. I hope that it is clear, Abu Am.
Naam, Ya Sheikh. Ahsan Allah ilayk.
Ameen wa iyyak.
So this one reads, if someone chooses to always prefer their family members when giving sadaqah over outsiders, does it mean they are selfish or self-centered?
No, it doesn't mean that they are selfish. It is even encouraged to give preference to family members, because apart from charity, you are also connecting family ties. When you give to outsiders, you are only doing one thing. when you give to family members, you are doing two things. If you give to outsiders, you are giving charity. If you give to family members, you are giving charity, and you are connecting the ties of kinship. But let it be clarified. If it is obligatory charity like zakah, if it is obligatory charity like zakah, those upon whom you have a duty to spend upon, you are not going to give them zakah. Like your child, you are not going to give him zakah. Like your wife, you are not going to give him zakah. Why? Because you ordinarily have a duty to spend upon them. Even though it can come the other way around, if a woman is paying zakah, she can give her husband from it. Why? She's not obligated. He is not under those that she is spending upon. So you can see now, when a man sits down and enjoys money his wife is giving to him, you see that it's an abnormality, because ordinarily the wife can give zakah to the husband because it shouldn't be under him, under her. On the other way around, it shouldn't be. The man should not give zakah to his wife. Why? Because she is basically and essentially part of his spendings, part of those that are obligatory on him to spend upon. So those that are obligatory upon you to spend upon from family members, don't give them zakah. But if it is charity, ordinary sadaqah, then you can give to everybody. That's a general understanding that we should add to the virtues of giving family members. When you give family members, you connect family ties, and then you are giving charity. But when you give others outside, then you are only giving charity. You are not necessarily connecting family ties, because those people are not members of your family. So it's very, very encouraged to give sadaqah. I mean supererogatory sadaqah to members of your family. Give them preference. Give them preference. That is not to now say you cut off those who are not family members, that you will not give unless the man is your family member. Like the Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, his character was that if a person came to him for a need and he has the ability to fulfill the need, he fulfilled the need. So don't come back to say, oh, what about family members first? Someone came to you for a need, you have the ability to fulfill the need. You now tell him to hold on. You go back to your family and start looking for somebody who has a need first. Fulfill the need. Fulfill the need of that person, even though he was not a member of your family. You put everything in its place. May Allah protect each and every one of us. Let us go and understand. Nobody likes to beg the next person. Nobody likes to take from the next person. Every reasonable person wants to be the one giving. If you find a man has a need and he comes to you, give him, because he would have been in your place. Would have been in your place. Revert the case that you are the one having a need for him to ask, for you to ask him. How do you feel when he treats you badly for asking? So treat those who ask you, treat them well and give them what you need. Where you have the ability to fulfill the need, give them. If you don't have the ability, promise them. If you don't have anything you are also expecting, direct them to someone who can provide. If you don't have any of these three, then say a good word to them. فَكُلَّهُمْ قَوْلًا مَيْسُورًا. Say a word that is nice, that will ease the effect of his trouble upon his mind. Don't say a negative word to him. So you have four things. When a person comes to you for a need, you either give him what he needs, you either promise him, you give him at another time if it will meet the need. You either guide him to a person who can help him provide the need, or you do what? Say a good word to him and let him go. May Allah protect each and every one of us. Abu Amir.
Can we just take this last one, sir?
Okay, bismillah.
For someone who fasted Shawwal on Saturday, should he repay that day, or is the Shawwal valid since the person just gained the knowledge of not fasting Shawwal on Saturday?
If he did not know, then the fast is valid. If he did not know, then leave the fast. But now that you have known, don't go back to fast on a Saturday.
نعم جزاكم الله خيرا أحسن الله لكم وأستلكم الله
آمين السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته